And now I would like to introduce our main speaker for the evening, Robert S. from San Diego.
Good evening, folks. My name is Robert, and I am truly an alcoholic. And before we get started too far, I'd just like to welcome the six people that introduced themselves as newcomers to a new way of life. They told me the only requirement for this membership is a desire to stop drinking. I've done that over 4,375 consecutive days, one day at a time. And that's what you can do. And if you're just trying to figure out how much time that is, that's 5 days shy of being 12 years. I'd like to welcome my visitor, Erica. Thank you for coming out. And all of the people that came out to support me in this walk of life, where we trudge in this happy moment. And, thank James for stepping up to the plate and being a 10-minute speaker. Before we get started, I just got to remove myself out the way. And it's always an honor, to do this. Thank Larry and Chris for inviting me out to speak. You guys are awesome. Can you just give me a moment of silence while I just remove myself? I love this one because this is the first one that Bill came with that he did, and I like to do it myself. Says, there I humbly offer myself to God. As I then understood him to do with me as he would, I place myself unreservedly under his care and directions. I admitted for the first time that of myself I was nothing, that without him I was lost. I ruthlessly faced my sins and became willing to have my newfound friend take them away. Root and branch, I have not had a drink since. Well, here we go. In our big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it says our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If that flew over your head, all they told me to do is just come out, share my experience, strength, and hope, and that's how simple it is. I'm kind of glad the room ain't as packed as they say it be, because I had butterflies sitting up here. But, it's never a dull moment in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I am so proud to be a member of this program. My character defects started way back, and I didn't realize what character defects was until I arrived. But as a young kid in 1969, I ain't going to go too far back because I don't remember all that other stuff. I come from a home of an alcoholic father and a normal mama. Let my mind rest in peace because she got to see me make it to this place. For the simple thing, in 1969, it was Christmas Day, man, and, we woke up. I was 8 years old, and it was the first time that I ever have locked myself out from the sunlight of the Spirit. I closed everybody out because I was heartbroken because our family broke up for the first time. Because my mother got sick and tired of that drunk, that alcoholic husband, and she packed up and left. While we were sleeping that night, when we went to bed, we knew we was going to wake up and see Christmas. And I finally got something that I always wanted. Me and my oldest brother got our first pool table, and that was the end of the ending. Because we broke up, and then when my mom called that house and told us to pack our stuff and just get up out of there, saying, what the hell you mean? And then I told her, can I take my pool table? Dumbass, get your butt up and go. And then we walked across that snow over to a friend of hers, and we sat there. By the year 1970, by the time when a month later was up, we was over there for a few weeks. She raised the money, picked up everything. She had 7 kids at that time. One, my oldest sister, let her soul rest in peace. She was already out here with my grandmother. And she picked up the 6 kids, including I. There were 6 of us, and we got on the train and rode out here. That was the best thing. I loved that woman dearly, and that was my hero. But she kind of broke my heart, and I had to run around here hoarding on some hatred and some animosity for a long time before I realized what was going on, and that's when my shortcomings started, because I didn't want nobody to get close. I didn't want her to have no other man, because I felt like you should have been with my dad. And being that he was a great alcoholic, and see, I'm going to tell you like this, that if you're a father or a mother, don't ever talk down to your children. Because everybody always reminded me that I was my dad. I said, I didn't even know that man when I arrived here. I was 1 month shy of being 9 years old. That was over 40 years ago. That everybody used to always say, and then when I picked up drinking, it was the thing to do. I should have known right then and there. But me being the alcoholic that I was, it was already preceded that I was going to be one. I didn't even have a clue of it. And all of a sudden, see, at the age of 13, I took my first drink. And it was some Mad Dog 2020. Best thing that ever happened to me. You know, I should have known I was an alcoholic when I fell over the wall, rolled in some dirt, threw up, woke up the next day and said, damn, that was fun, and went on a mission for 26 years. You'll never understand what could have happened. Well, they talk about that in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, that peculiar mental twist. It arrived in my thinking, man, and it screwed me up because I thought I was all of that in a bag of chips. You couldn't tell me nothing. But I would never, like, sit here and just try to be something that I'm not, you know, because I'm going to give you a couple of stories to let you see where the peculiar mental twist sit in. You know, I don't think that nobody, see, because this is a great area for me to speak. I was here when the first meeting came here, when Skeet spoke, and I thought it was the best thing. And I ain't been back since because I've been doing other commitments. But I was down here. This was the end of the ending, but I don't want to do that one yet. I'm going to go here. Think like this. If you're an alcoholic like me, one of the brightest things, it's a cold day out in Spring Valley. It's raining like dogs and cats. It's real cold, and I'm out there in a drunken state, stumbling and bumbling around Spring Valley, and I get this great thought. This the peculiar mental twist sit in. Ooh, just blew my fuse when I thought like that. And I said, what the hell am I doing out here walking in the rain and it's pouring? And I got a 1969 Thunderbird sitting over there, suicide doors, just waiting for me. But not being the bright man that I was, because I ain't all that bright, I had this great thought. And I just jumped in the car and I figured I'd just go for a ride and just, you know, being an alcoholic that I was, you know. And I rode the car, and then about time when the car started rolling, I realized why I didn't have the car and why I was parked. But by that time, the car drove itself to a big old hill. Not dictionary, but it was similar to that, you know. And all of a sudden, this great thought came back to my mind. Dumbass, now you know why the car was parked, because it didn't have no brakes. Oh, shit! What an alcoholic. So I get this great thought again that I can't kill nobody. They'll really throw the book at me, man, if I go down this hill and kill something. So I had to think real quick. Now, being the great mind that I had, man, I had this great thought. Well, I don't want to run into nobody's house. I don't want to run nobody over. So I think I'm going to hit this pole right here that's standing there. What the hell did I do that for? Pop! I hit that pole so hard and knocked me out for a minute. And I come to and all these people were running up on me talking about, sir, sir, you all right? I said, what the hell do you think? I just hit a pole. And I stepped out that car in a drunken state, locked the door, and walked away from it. I said, what an alcoholic. But that ain't nothing, man, because I'll tell you another one that's real good. Because I was this type of alcoholic. I was so in denial for so many years that don't ever do this. If you newer than me and you up in these rooms, man, just find your seat and hold on to it, because this is a deadly, cunning, baffling disease, and it's out to kill you. And for me, They gave me one of the biggest gifts in the world. Man, I thought I arrived in heaven, man. I was the maintenance guy down the street when this was a Texaco over here at the corner. And I thought I was all of that in a bag of chips. And this was coming to the last days, man. And they gave me the keys to heaven, man. I finally arrived, man. I got the keys to a liquor store department. What the hell are you giving a drunk like me access to the liquor? And every day when I come in to do my work, I had to get a 22-ouncer. I had to get a 32-ouncer. And then I get a 18-pack to put in back of my seat. So I make sure that if somebody come along and want to drink, see, because misery loves company, and if I'm in a miserable state of mind, I'm not going to hell by myself. So I had made sure I had enough beer for another miserable sucker to come along. So we sat there and we drank, poor me, and then I left and went to another store they had on Convoy. And I was doing this, and then this is so funny because the owner said somebody came to him and said, "You know, Robert smelled like he'd been drinking." And when, like most alcoholics, "Oh, no, Mr. Thomas, not me. I would never do that on the job. I love you." And he looked at me like I was a fool, man, and he knew, because I didn't know it was coming out of my pores. Hell, I showered last night. I got up and I washed my face, brushed my teeth. What the hell is liquor doing coming out of my pores? See, I never smelled that stuff. But everybody else could smell it. And I sat there and I did that for a while, and this is where my bottom came. I skipped over a lot of it because I don't want to sit here and get glorifying the drunkalog. I want you to get into some of the good stuff. But I sit there and I failed to realize that one day I was sitting at home and my wife, she said, "You need to tell your PO you need some help." And she's giving me that ultimatum. I'm not going to tell him I need no help. That's like telling on myself. Are you crazy? And all of a sudden, we were sitting at the table, and somebody kept kicking me in my shin, and all of a sudden, I saw they come up out the mouth and said, "I need help." I said, "Who the hell is that?" And I looked. That was me. And I asked for help, and that was in the year 2000. And that was the beginning of the end, and they was trying to help me. And they were sending me to these classes out in Chula Vista, and I was going over there in good faith that I wanted some help. But it didn't go that way. Because being the man that I was, you know, I was in full flight from reality. Do you know I was an outright mental defect? Do you understand that, man? A mental defect. No alcoholic want to hear nobody call him that. "What the hell you told? You can't call me that. I didn't even like you when you called me an alcoholic. I love it today, but I didn't like it back then." And they wasn't moving fast enough, and I needed some help, man. So I was sitting up in there, and I was fighting with this disease because they got me sitting down here at Chula Vista Parole, and I'm trying to get up in here, and I want to get some help fast because I got one of them deadly diseases that he's telling me to go get loaded one more time. Forget this. They ain't moving fast enough. I can get myself into a program faster than this. So I went out one more time, and I went on a spree for a couple of weeks, and that was the end of the ending. Because finally somebody, this man, that gangster that I thought I was, because I was a living legend in my own damn head, didn't want to hurt the person that was hurting me the most, but I was hurting everybody. And you know, being that what I went through, I finally hit the bottom. I was at a friend's house, he retired, he was all of this, and we were sitting there drinking. And we drink. We didn't mix our drinks. I had Boilermakers. If you ain't ever had a Boilermaker, that's just a nice cold old English and some hard liquor and just chase it like that. And boy, I was killing my liver off, man. And I'm so grateful that I made it to these rooms and I don't have to be suffering from some of the diseases like cirrhosis of the liver and things like that and the wet brain because I made it. I arrived. But it was like that day when I had went up my friend's house, I finally got hit in the head one last time with a foreign object that knocked the mess out of me and knocked some sense into my head, and blood started spurting like, man, it just came up out of there like nothing, man. I thought it was a spout, man, and somebody turned the faucet on. But yeah, I'm not knowing no better. So I sat there and I got blinded and I told him, man, I grabbed his son and I held on to him, and God let his soul rest in peace because he died in his disease. He didn't make it to these rooms. But thank God for that man, because he helped me and then I arrived. Because with that hit in the head, that was the last of the last, man, and I didn't have to look back no more. Because as a result of that, I ended up going to the hospital. They called their wife that was trying to get me some help. She came over. She came over to the hospital when I arrived there in the ambulance. And I was sitting in there, and I was belligerently cursing everybody out. Man, I had so much profanity in me. Boy, I make an NFL tackler, man. Just throw a purse down, and just all of the girls come up out of them. And I was like, I was mean. And the doctor came up in there, and the nurses, and I was cursing everybody out. And I humiliated that woman so bad, the way I was acting in my last drunk, that woman ended up walking out, head down like this, and she just didn't look back. And then, and somebody, God bless this man, screamed louder than them voices that was going off in my head. I don't know about you, but if you're an alcoholic like me, see, I got little people up in my head. They scream at me all the time. They still scream at me, but it's okay. And I listened to it, and I was screaming over, and he was screaming over me, and he said the words that I've been wanting to hear. You want some help? I can get you some help. And I said, what did you say? And he said, just what I needed. He made the phone call, and I arrived at detox on 1111 Island. And that's where my journey began. And this is where we can get from that drunker log and get to some of the good stuff. Because I'm going to tell you like this, my last drunk was like so devastating. When I had humiliated that wife so bad, I fell out of that car because she took me over to detox. I rolled out that car and I stumbled into the doors. I didn't look back because I didn't know what I was going into. I didn't know what I was walking into. I didn't know that these was a bunch of drunks in here sobering up, man. I didn't know if it was a coke. What the hell are they sending me to? But whatever it was, I just wanted to get that monkey off my back, because I had no more mental defense. I've lost the power of choice. They told me this, but I didn't want to believe that. And as I arrived in that place, man, in detox, and they say, you usually 3 days you sober up. Well, you know, I usually can go to sleep and sleep a good 8 hours, and I wake up and feel fine after I take another cold one. But this time, it took me almost a week to clear up the fog so I can move on. But I had my tablet, and detox, they give you a tablet. And I used to write everything down that people came in there and said, because I wanted to know who I was weakened for. Who had the most power over me? And why did I have such a lack of power? Because I didn't know no better that I was an alcoholic. I thought I just had a bad day of drinking that day. But for the love of God, I heard what I needed to hear. Sitting up in there, beat that mess up, stitches in my head, just tote back. I ended up standing there 7 days, then they moved me over next door to 10-day. And I went to 10-day, and I sat up in there, and and I'm just like all fogged up still, and they started to try to make us use some of the brain power that we had up there. And I thought I've just burnt every damn cell up. But I seem to kind of remember when they told us to go around the table and ask a person their first name and what's their favorite food, and I was getting pretty good, but I was still screwed up. And I said, I think I got to do something, and I didn't know what I needed to do, so I was sitting there and about getting close to time to leave, they told me about a program that was coming down, and it was going to take an interview, and I'll be able to get into treatment. And I was like, I was anticipating. And, I hate to break anonymity, but, Doug know I love him and stuff, man. And Freedom Ranch came down, and I went to it. I went into it, man, and we went down to the park that day, and we was playing ball, and I couldn't even get into the ball because I was anticipating to get up in that interview so I could hurry up and get on the list to go up to the ranch. And I fought like a madman, and by the time when we arrived back to the place, I seen Doug sitting over there on the porch, and I ran up, and I did the interview, and he said, when you complete the program, because I'm going to tell you, I cleaned some of my language up because I don't say graduation, because if they would have told me I graduated and gave me my certificate, I probably would have went out there and said, now I could drink like a real gentleman, but I didn't get that bribe yet. And I ended up, and I sat up in there, and we did the interview, and he told me when I complete the program to call every day when I get out. So as I got close to that point, and then that day came, and I completed the program, I got a certificate, and I was getting my walking papers, and that wife that was out there, she was waiting for me. And all of a sudden, something happened. They give me everything. And everything was coming to me like it should have, and I almost blew it again because I went upstairs unsupervised one more time because my gold necklace like this come up missing. And, you know, we're dealing with alcoholics. Some of us are still sicker than others. And I said, y'all don't know who you messing with. Who the hell you think you is robbing a robber, a jacker like myself? And I was going upstairs, and I was ready to go up in there and start tearing some stuff up because you stole my necklace. You don't steal from me. And that man and that woman looked at me, and she said, what are you tripping on? You've been sober almost 3 weeks, and you about to throw it away for a doggone necklace. I said, but you don't know. That was a gift to me. And she told me like this. She said something so profound that it just made me snap back to reality. Remember, I was in full flight from reality. And that girl said, I'll get you another necklace. Well, what the hell you waited so long to say that for? She. And I came back for a moment. And I went on about my little journey. And I went home. And I was so scared because I didn't get here by a court slip. About P.O. or nothing like that. When I got into the recovery thing, I was beat up. I was at my last whip, man, and I had no more fight in me. And, you know, what happened is I'm sitting at home, and every morning when my family leave out to go to work, you know, the kids go to school, the wife go to work, I would go to the Lemon Grove Alano Club, and I sit there, and I made up my own little sheet. And I sat in the meetings for 8 hours all day. I sit at that Lano Club. And I would not leave that place until the wife came home from work and came and picked me up because I was scared. That house that I had out there, I did a lot of dirt in that house. And now if you're an alcoholic like me, man, I hid a lot of liquor in that house, and I knew that. And I didn't want to be in that house alone because I knew I would find that liquor and get drunk again. So I had to do what they suggested, and I went out there, and I followed somebody else's directions, and I went to the meetings, and I sat there, and I got the slip signed. And by the time when 2 weeks was up, I called again on that day because they was calling every other day, and they said, we got a bed for you, and you got 2 hours to get up here. I dropped everything, dropped the phone, and ran over there and screamed at my wife and said, drop everything, we got to go. Hold up, big dog, hold up. What the hell you mean, hold up? No, we got to go. They got a bed for me. And we jumped in that van, and we drove 45 minutes up to Campo. And that was the best thing that ever happened for me. Because by the time when I got up there, and, you know, we called this dude the big book with lips. I love this dude because he the one that helped me to get a hold of this disease and find out that I needed to get a program, and I needed to enlarge up on my spiritual life, and I needed to get in here and get busy. And he used to walk us through, because the old day Sundays was the greatest, man. I don't care what nobody say. He helped me, and he helped many other ones. And this dude used to drill us. Bam, bam, bam. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. And on Wednesday, resentment. I'm saying, what the hell? And he used to be on that chalkboard doing that, man. And, you know, we said, the how of the program is willingness. Without the willingness, I wasn't ready to do none of that other stuff. But that is the whole key to this, man. If you ain't willing and a desperado like I was, this thing is insignificant. It ain't going to work. You got to be a damn desperado up in here. You got to want this thing. And I was willing as the dying could be. Because I wanted that monkey off my back. And I sat there and I listened to this dude. And then when he went through them steps, man, he was saying honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. And he worked the first three. And then on Wednesday, they used to make us do this thing. Because Frank, God forbid, I love that dude. Let his soul rest in peace. He passed too. He was our cook. And he used to make some of the nastiest spaghettis on Wednesday. So we call this Resentment Wednesday. Nasty spaghetti, so you will get to working on some steps. So we learned what a resentment was real quick up there. And I was like still doing time because I was eating soups and spreads and stuff up in there. And I was doing it all. So I just figured that on Wednesday, by the time when we got to the fourth step, it was time to get busy. And then guys, the counselors used to always say, What's the key? And I'm like, I'm walking around with my book like I'm all of that in a bag of chips and looking like some kind of pastor or something, man. And I knew I had it going on. I was reading the book. But that's why they say, don't try to go into this literature by yourself. It's like driving with a two crash dummies. Buckle up. You can learn a lot, buddy. And I sat there, and that dude challenged me, and I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? What's the key? So I ran back to the top of the hill, and I sat there, and I'm flipping through the book. I want to know what the hell he's talking about. And that was the key, willingness. And I found that in the book because I had to go in there and search it out. And then I got with some brothers, and we just sat around, and we did our little step work, and we did our reading. And then all of a sudden, don't be like me. Because when I was up in that ranch, you know, we used to say, before I leave off this hill, I'm going to leave some of this old junk up here. And now I was working on them steps, man, because we take the steps. It ain't nowhere else found in the book yet that they say we worked it. And one of our old-timers told me like this, working is like plowing the field. We don't work nothing. We take the steps around here. And that's what I had to do. And I took these steps, and I was sitting up there, and we was doing what we needed to do. And now all of a sudden, we was up at that cross on the hill on the rocks. And I did the third step prayer with my friend. And it went like, man, God, I offer myself to thee to bear with me and to do with me as thy will. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, thy way of life. May I do thy will always. That was the softer and the better way and not so aggressive. When Bill did his, he said, I humbled, he ruthlessly faced his sins. I don't know about you. I like the third step prayer in the page 63. I don't like to throw the pages out, but I'm going to do this one time for you. Because if you want to know where I got my information, you will go to book studies and you will get into this literature and you will start reading and then study asking for an easier, softer way. Because all of this literature is here for your edification. It will help you get a solution to this disease that was killing us. And it was, if it ain't killed you yet, you keep playing with it. This is a deadly, cunning, baffling disease that's out to kill me. And I didn't know that. And I fought with it like that for a long time. And as a result of taking that third step up there on that hill, I got busy. And see, my fourth step was like this. Up there in the mountains, I'm like, I'll never forget this. It's 50 brothers up there. And it was like a handful of brothers out of all them 50 guys. And I'm sitting up here saying to myself, what the hell a brother doing up in Campo in a dirt field in a goddamn shack? I said, I couldn't believe it. But it was everything that I needed, man, because I knew where every liquor store was in San Diego. I could find a liquor store. I could have found it on the top of a mountain peak because I knew how to do that. But then I felt like this is what I needed, man. I needed to be somewhere where I was secluded away, where I can work on myself. And I got into that program, and I did everything that was suggested, and I stayed up there for months, and then all of a sudden they had this great idea. They said, Robert, we think you need a little longer treatment, so you need to go into a sober living. Well, what the hell I need to do that for? I got a house, got a wife and a family, I need to go home. No, you need to go to the, okay. See, my mind was already made up. Okay, well, Lace, you gonna go to the stay here? Okay, you know, cause sometimes you need to get up out of yourself and let somebody else lead the way. And I followed these guys for a long time around here. And my first couple of years was everything, because when I arrived out of that ranch and came down to that sober living, I was on Massachusetts, man, in Central, on the corner house. And Patrick, I love that dude. He allowed me to come in there. And I became a professional mover. And I was doing everything that I needed to do. And I was going to meetings, and I was taking the steps. But then, let me back up just 1 minute. Because I was telling you something about, don't do this like I did. One day, we was having our luau up there at the ranch. And I had this great idea again. So I went upstairs unsupervised, and I made a sponsor, my sponsor, by looking at him. I said, that's my sponsor. And the guys up there clowned me like never before. Who's your sponsor? I said, Phil. Phil came up there and humiliated me so bad, man. I said, man, why do you talk to me like that? Because he said, you didn't ask me to be your sponsor. And then I said, will you be my sponsor? And he took me on, and he took me through them steps. And we went down here, and I got down here into that sober living. Best thing that ever happened to me. Because I figured like this, I'm going to go into that sober living, and I'm going to do about 6 months. And I'm going to learn how to do this thing right, man. And I'm going to go out there, and I'm going to have a little better time with my drinking. So it didn't happen like that, because God have a hell of a way to have a sense of humor for me, because it was 2 years later by the time when they realized that, man, it's time to kick Rob out. They had to then kick me out. I was, no, I don't want to go. I got complacent. I didn't want to leave that house. I was the manager, the assistant manager, the resident. I just couldn't leave. And I feel I found my place. And when they told me it was time to go home, I was afraid to go home, because one day I was at the house on the pass, and I was looking for something. I dropped under the bed, and I tapped something cold under there and almost had a heart. Oh, gosh, and it was a bottle of beer. And I didn't want to go back home yet until we cleaned that house up. But I ended up going home. And then, you know, I had 2 years of sobriety, and I didn't even realize that I was already equipped, man. I'd arrived to a point where there's no words to explain what happened, but I've been rocketed into a fourth dimension that was out of this world, man, and I found everything that I needed. And I seen, because this sponsor that I had when I got into that sober living, this was so funny, because Phil was, I'm going to hate to say it, and I hope that you ain't got sensitive ears or virgin ears, because he was an asshole. So profanity is a part of my language, too. And that dude used to come to that sober living, and I had the downstairs. It was the garage, a big old garage, and me and this other dude shared it. And then, you know, Phil used to come in there with a flashlight and tap my bed and wake me up at 4:30 in the morning. As you know, I was a mover, and I was doing recovery already. So he, for another 90 days, I'm saying, what the hell I need to do another 90 days for? I just come out of the Freedom Ranch, and I got down here, and I got over 6 months. Why do I need 90 more days? But I did what he said, and I get up, because I used to look at him with that flashlight. I said, you lucky you my sponsor, man, because I kicked your ass for hitting my bed like that. Never wake me up like that. And that man was so great, because he took me. And this is another funny one, because all of my recovery was in the East County. And I'm looking at myself like, what the hell a brother doing up in Santee at 5:30 in the morning at the eye opener? He used to make me get up and go to the eye opener at 5:30, man. And I used to can't stand him for that, but I loved that man because that was where everything happened. Them guys had so much good recovery in there. They used to study out of the daily reflection, and they start their money off, and it was everything that I needed, and it helped me to enhance, and I kept doing the work that they suggested, and I kept enlarging up on my spiritual life, and I started investing in literature around here, because all that money that I used to spend in my disease, I start putting it into my recovery. And I got all kind of bags of books. I got so many books. My baby now, she looked at me like, man, who are this? Some kind of philosopher or something, man. He's got books up the yang yang. And I got bags, and I keep a bag of books in my car. I got them, me and my boys, when we was coming over here, they learned, man, what you got in the back of your SUV? Man, I got everything that I need, because when I'm out there, ain't no telling when real life might show up, and I might need to pull my tools out, because we all got that spiritual toolkit, but we got to learn how to use it. See, I don't never go unhanded, butt naked by myself in society. I carry these things, man, because this is where I found the solution to all my problems. I've learned to accept things. Running this race, and I've been doing the things that they told me to do, and I'm doing this, man, because I get so much enjoyment. I'm not burning up energy like I used to. I'm having so much fun. I might be tired tonight, like I told my woman. I'm very tired. I work. I run a sober living. I got commitments up the yang yang. I do a H&I panel for a crash. I do at Amigo, I do a step study, book studies. You know, I do some stuff down at Salvation Army. I do a lot of closed men's meetings because this is where I get grounded. So when I'm able to come into an open meeting with an open discussion with women in the room, I know how to conduct myself as a man. And this is what my sponsor them taught me, and this is what I teach the guys that's around me. Because I got a little time around here, don't think that I'm not exempt from relapse. Because if I'm not working this program, I'm going to be kicked off, picked off, or whatever, you know. I don't want to get picked off, so I stay in the middle of this thing, and I get busy, man. This is like the best thing that ever happened to a cat like me, you know, because I tell you, man, you can never get enough of this, man, because that man read the vision for you, you know. And I don't want to ever have to face that. Insidious Four Horsemen, man. So I stay up in these rooms and I get busy because any day, any time, you know, if we ain't up in here doing what we supposed to do and on the firing line and running this race and taking suggestions, and you will always be a follower if you don't learn how to become a leader. So you take the suggestion that your sponsors is giving you, and you run this race. Because I don't think none one of these alcoholics in these rooms ever told me, Rob, take the goddamn gun and blow your head off. They always suggested that I go do something, like service. And I got up out of myself, and I started doing that. Because you know, when they talk about the Four Horsemen, they talking about the terror, the bewilderment, the frustration, and the despair, you know. And I had to face all of that, man. And I've been there, done that. I don't want to have to face that stuff no more. So I get in here and I get busy with this program because I need to know when I'm going through this book, you know, I'm not going to tell you I'm a book thumper. I ain't all of that in a bag of chips. But when I arrived here, I knew that I found true happiness in here, man, because these people was not faking the funk. And, you know, right here they told us, you know, when I'm out here, I spend a great deal of my time passing on what I learned to others who want and need it badly. I do it for four reasons. He said, one, for a sense of duty. Two, it is a pleasure. Three, because in doing so, I am paying my debts to the men who took time to pass it on to me. And four, because every time I do it, I take out a little more assurance for myself against a possible slip. And I don't believe in a slip, man. Because if you didn't step on a banana peel and fall down, ain't no such thing as a slip. And I'm going to tell you why. Because you can't slip up into a liquor store. Slip up to the cashier and tell him to slip you a bottle and slip him some money and slip out the door and slip the top off the bottle and slip it to your lips and get drunk. That sounds like a damn conscious decision. and I just don't feel like I'm going to tell you, oops, I'm falling down and I can't get back up. This here has been the best journey I've ever been on. I've never felt so complete about living in my own skin. Because, as you know, I was trying to rid myself of this person that I was dealing with. I did not like to look in the mirror. Today I love to look in the mirror. I love me so goddamn much how I'm able to love you. And that's some cold stuff, boy. But this is what we get to do around here, man. Because as long as we stay busy, what minutes? Talk to me. 6 minutes. I'm still doing good. You know, it's some things that I have to do around here that I got to stay fit, man. Here it is. I wanted to tell you something about some of the absolutes that we have to do. One, you have to absolutely be honest up in this program. Number two, the absolute is be pure. The purity that you don't get around here. On our tokens, they say, to thy own self be true. You can fake the funk all you want, sit up in here and think that you're going to be all okay and you ain't doing no work and you just sitting in here and hoping that all of a sudden something just crawled up the bottom of the chair and all of a sudden you just had, woo, a spiritual awakening. It don't happen like that. You got to get in here and get busy, and that's what I'm telling. This is something that I had to do, and I had another absolute of not being unselfish. And the fourth absolute is love. Love and tolerance is a part of our code around here, and this is what we do. See, when you say that you've been rocketed into a fourth dimension, I don't know about you, but I know for sure, and I came to believe, because I had to come to believe, that I know for sure that God would want my heads in the clouds with him, but my feet ought to be firmly planted on this earth doing his will, not Rob's will no more, because left to my devices, I like to hurt people. Today I ain't hurt nobody in dang near 12 years. I ain't had to put on a pair of silver bracelets in over 12 years. What a concept. And if you don't have a guy, find one. Because that's what this whole book was designed to do. Point you in a direction and get a guy that you can do business with. This is a design for a new way of living. If you ain't got there yet, start getting there. Man, 5 minutes left, and I can think of a lot of things that I can say. I'd like to just go here and just read this, because it's something that I have to do for myself all the time, you know. And this is like, you can never get enough, and then I'll break you off something that's coming from my heart, man, to you guys. And this is like one of the most beautiful prayers that you will ever meet around here, because this is something that I didn't have no prayers when I came around here. I had that one simple selfish prayer. Oh, God, help me. And every time he helped me, I told him, okay, big dog, I got this. Today, I can honestly say I know how to pray, I know how to get busy, and I know how to have a relationship with my God. He said, Lord, make me a channel of thy peace, that where there is hatred, I may bring love. That where there is wrong, I may bring the spirit of forgiveness. That where there is discord, I may bring harmony. That where there is error, I may bring truth. That where there is doubt, I may bring faith. That where there is despair, I may bring hope. That where there are shadows, I may bring light. That where there is sadness, I may bring joy. Lord, grant that I may seek rather to comfort than to be comforted, to understand than to be understood, to love than to be loved. For it is by self-forgetting that one finds, it is by forgiving that one is forgiven, it is by dying that one awakens to eternal life. We are all miracles up in this room. And you know what a miracle is? It ain't running around here telling everybody, I'm a grateful alcoholic and I've been sober. No, a miracle is when you step from the dark side and come into the light. And you're in the light right now. And if you want to stay in the light, get busy in these steps. Get off the elevator so the cord don't break and you come tumbling down. Because 12 floors up, it's a long way up to come tumbling down real fast. Take the steps. Don't work the steps. Take the steps and apply it into your spirit. And get busy with your recovery. And come over here on this side with us. Because surrender around here is not throwing up a white flag. It's jumping off the losing side and getting on the winner's side. We the winners up in here. And if you up in these rooms, you will know what we're talking about. How much time I got before I go? 3 minutes. I'm going to leave you guys like this. It's a poem that kept me when I was going through everything that I was going through. And I want to say it for you guys. Hopefully that it might hit home for some of you guys. Because you need to remove the word "I can" out of your vocabularies and start saying "I can." In the Bible that I read, it says, I could do all things through my God who I call Jesus Christ. I don't care about you, but that's who I serve. And he said I ain't had to be a perfectionist. Now I'm going to leave you like this. Figure it out for yourself, my lad. You've all that the greatest of man have had. 2 arms, 2 hands, 2 legs, 2 eyes, and a brain to use if you be wise. With this equipment, they all begin. So start from the top and say you can. Look them over, the wise and the great. They take their food from a common plate. And similar knives and forks they use. With similar laces, they tie their shoes. We would consider them brave and smart. But you've all they had when they made their start. You can triumph and come to skills. You can be great if you only will. You well equipped for what fight you choose. You have arms and legs and a brain to use. I can. Thank you for letting me hold you hostage.